This is the Visual Developers Podcast with your hosts, Lacey Kessler, Matt Varghese, and Ben Parker. Interviews, no-code reviews, tutorials, and more, we're here to talk about all things no-code.
Hey, everybody. Ben here with Visual DevFM, back for another episode. Excited to have you with us. As usual, I'm here with my co-hosts, Lacey and Matt.
Hola.
Hello.
And this week we're going to talk about building an e-commerce store and how to kind of build an e-commerce store that makes money without having to put down a whole lot of money up front, just kind of how to take advantage of that print on demand, ship on demand, passive income, talk about how to do all that with no code. We're super excited to jump into that topic. But before we get there, as always, we're going to talk about everything that's new in no code. So let's get started. Since this is the official unofficial Glide podcast, we'll start with a Glide update. They added a new chart style, which is stacked charts. We got a link in the show notes to this. But this is a cool touch. They just keep adding these. We've talked about this. They add these really big features, and then they go through adding these nice little flourishes and things that make their app really shine and look so incredible and professional. And it's unbelievable what you can do now with a Google spreadsheet and you can turn it into. And so super cool. If you haven't seen that, definitely you want to check that out. Last week we talked about Chris Alarcon. He's back in the roundup again this week. He tweeted about how you can set up targeted ads on Twitter with no code, which is really cool. He talked about how you can use Phantom Buster to take some tweets maybe that you had that were very popular, and then you can use that tweet and search for people who favorited it, and then search basically in their bio for specific terms, maybe if they're interested in no code or different things, and you definitely want to target what they are. Then you can like kind of roll out some nice targeted ads on Twitter. So if you were looking to do something with your no code work, no code business, this is definitely something to check out. It's a really cool walkthrough, and we need to have Chris on. This is two weeks in a row we've had some tweet threads on from him. Some really cool no-code processes. And so this is really neat. Lacey kicked off Women in No-Code, or WINC, and it's pretty cool. And I'm super excited about this. And I think it's just such a great idea. So I'm just going to shut up now and let Lacey talk about what this looks like and all that's happening with it.
Thanks. Yeah, I've actually been going back and forth on would I include any like wink emojis in the branding or anything like that. I don't know. I don't know if I can do it, but we'll see. So I'm super excited to launch this, share about it. The feedback has been absolutely overwhelming in such a positive way. I've really just been taken back by how well the community has embraced this and shared it and offered to help, and the partners and sponsors that we've already received. And so just super exciting. And what it is that it is a community for women in no code, and it is specifically to empower and equip women to share about their no-code journeys, difficulties that they're having, be able to get help, have access to tutorials and articles, and as well as showcase what they're building or what they've built, their process, to shine the light on them. I think if you've been around the community for even a little while, you can see that it's very heavily male dominated, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just that, women are here too. And so having a community that we can focus and amplify their voices, I'm really, really excited about.
No, I love this. This is something we talk about all the time, just as a group within ourselves. So there's not enough women makers in the no code space, and we just don't see enough from them, and what can we do? And I love that you took this step and are like, okay, if I'm just going to do what I can to really accelerate this space. And so super excited about it and what it's going to look like and how that's going to work. And I don't know, just love this, love the work so far, loving the landing page, and looking forward to what's coming. So link in the show notes to go hit all of this. So if you're a woman in no-code and you want to go join this group, we'll have links for you. If you know somebody who should be in this group, please share it with them. We want to make sure that everybody's seen that. Tom Peckers got a couple of tweets from Tom, and this is where you have the DJ horn. I don't know. Hot take alert. He tweeted about value-based pricing, and his quote exactly was, because his tweet exactly was, unpopular opinion, question mark, value-based pricing for web builds is dumb. And it was the cowboy emoji, which I'm not sure what that means, but it really made me laugh. And so
I take offense to that, Tom. Just have to take offense to that. I use the cowboy emoji. That's the Texas emoji. So we're going to have words on that.
He's saying people from Texas like value-based pricing and they're dum-dums. Is that how you're translating that?
I think so.
That doesn't seem right. Okay. No, so I think we all have something to say on this. I'm super interested to hear everybody else's take before I start spilling my own. So I know, Matt, like, we have the system where we kind of flag things we want to talk about, and everybody flagged this item. So just curious to hear, Matt, Lacey, what are your takes on value-based pricing?
Yeah, so, okay, I think value-based pricing means different things to different people. And one of the issues I have is when I see people be like, oh, yeah, you know, I build a project based on off of how many leads I can bring you on this website design. So I'll bring you, you know, 153 extra leads next year. And it's like, people will say things like that, but then give no basis on like how they got to that number. And a lot of times it's really arbitrary. When you, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with pricing that way, like you do you, but to get that sort of context, you have to, in the early stages of talking with a client, before you even have them as a client, you're going to have to get access to someone's marketing dashboard, you know, analytics, things like that. You'll have to figure out how many sales they're getting now. You'll have to somehow calculate how you're going to drive visits to that page and how many more visits are going to be attributed because of the web design. And so, like, I hate seeing this, like, blanket statement of, like, I'm going to bring you X number of leads and that's how we're going to do it. Because, like, realistically, like I've been running an agency and working with other people, and it's hard to do that. Like, it's not realistic to ask a client to give you straight up, like, hey, how many leads do you close a year? It's essentially asking, like, how much money do you make before we even sign anything and on, like, the first contact. So it's just kind of weird. Again, like, I have nothing against it. If it works for you, then continue, like, keep going. But it just doesn't work for me. It doesn't, like, I'm with Tom. It's pretty dumb.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree. I think it's not really a true pricing table. If you say, okay, well, you know, if I build this product for you, you could make X amount. And so if you could make that, then that means, like, let's say, all right, your product can make $1 million a year. Well, since I'm putting this all together for you, you should give me $100,000 for doing this because I'm going to make you $1 million. And I don't think that that's fair, especially on the front end, until you've proven it. If you want to set up some pricing structure on the back end that you have some sort of leads and you get, you know, X amount of money, that's different. And I think the first time I ever heard about this pricing was from Chris Doe. I'm not sure how you say it. And then I've heard Rand talk about it before. And I'm not like in the designer camp really. So, you know, there's probably context I'm missing out on there, but yeah, it's not my most favorite pricing strategy.
If I'm interpreting Tom right, I think what he's talking about is value-based pricing as a strategy where, let's say I'm building a web app and that web app could be the next Facebook. Well, this is a $1 billion idea. I'm a believer in it. So I'm going to charge X amount of that value to build it. And while I can understand that to a degree, I think if you believe in a product that much, instead of charging to build it, you should go, hey, how can I get in on this thing? Like, how can we part? Like, how do I get some equity here? How do I become a part of this? Right? Like, what does this look like? I want to help build this thing. But there is, there is, you know, that in between where people are building a product and, you know, like you're just going to help them build it, and saying like, oh, since you're going to make X amount of profits, I'm going to go ahead and charge this. I kind of tend to take the, I agree with Tom. I tend to take the approach where, you know, I look at what it's going to take me to build a project. I look at the scope of the project. One of the responses in the tweet was the read the room cost. Like I do that. I'm like, how do they talk about a project and what's it going to be like to manage this project with them and how do they work? And is this somebody who's going to be a micromanager or involved in places they probably shouldn't be, right? And then I put together a price based on that. I don't look at future potential earnings and go, this is what I'm going to charge you.
Right. Yeah. No, I think, see, that makes a ton of sense to me. And I think that's the way you should charge. I have heard, this is something interesting that I heard like 4 years ago that worked really well for someone. Instead of charging any fee, they just took 1% of future revenue. And this guy's in OKC. I don't know what exactly, I think he worked on the marketing side of things. And it makes more sense with marketing because you're running ad campaigns and things like that. But he took like 1% of like revenue generated. And I like, it worked out for him. Apparently he had a very successful business doing it. It's just, you have to be very, very good at what you do, I think, to do that. But yeah, I think like your way of doing it makes the most sense, like figuring out, taking in all those factors and then building your price.
But the truth is not everything makes it too. Like I think value-based pricing is also, I mean, if you get someone to pay it great up front, but you know, in your, like in that case, 1% of everything you make, you better be good at betting and gambling on things that are winners, like to have that kind of strategy.
100%.
Because if you bet on a loser, you know, then
you're out of luck.
You're out of luck, and you spend a lot of time and effort on something that's not going to give a return. It was an interesting tweet, and I was just like, I want to hear what everybody has to say about this.
Would y'all ever be interested in doing an episode on how to price projects, like how you price a project, not what you price, but how, what you take into consideration, the factors and all that? I know I'm putting you on the spot because we're on the air, but I think it could be interesting. Did you? Did we?
I'm pretty sure
we did.
You're on too.
Oh, yeah, my bad. That's what happens because I listen to the podcast. We'll
link to it in the show notes below.
Yeah, or we could reapproach it for 2020 too. I mean, things change. Things change for sure. Also from Tom Beckers, he posted a tweet. He's got a new product. It's called Footers. And Footers is a project where he has just a bunch of different styled footers in Webflow, and you can clone it. I think it's 10 plus clonable footers, or one project, but with 10 footers in it. So if I know some people tell me like the one thing they hate designing is the footer because it can be so intricate and there's so much detail that goes there. And there's like, by the time I get to that point in the page, I just have quit. I've heard that from a few people. If that's you, this project is great. A lot of good examples here and inspiration and pieces you can use to restyle and get started. So definitely go and check that out. Link in the show notes as usual. JetBoost. Does Chris sleep? We went from does Glide, do the people at Glide ever sleep, to does Chris Bags ever sleep? He's all over it. I mean, JetBoost as a filter is really cool, but he has this new integration with MemberStack. So MemberStack has metadata, and you could take your members' metadata and store all kinds of stuff in there. And in fact, with the API, they've even changed this up a little bit, but you can like things and then, or you could set things up where your members could like items and they could show the items that they like. So if they favorited something, like something, and it required some custom code and some JavaScript, and you kind of really had to muscle things around to get it to work. And then Chris is just like, hey, I'll just build it into JetBoost. And here we are. He has built favoriting things using MemberStack and JetBoost. I mean, no code. You set it up like you would JetBoost. Here's how incredible this is. And I'm working on a project right now that's an online conference, and I won't give any details, but we're using MemberStack, and one of the things we talked about was possibly favoriting. And I was like, you know, I'll just go ahead and write the code. We'll do this. It'll be fun. And then I'll put the code up for free for everybody to steal and grab, they could use it. And I offered to do this, and then it was a day later, Chris tweeted this. And so I sent it to the people I was working with, one person who loves no code. And he would message Chris and was like, I want in on this. Chris was like, here you go. And I promise you, it was not an hour later, I got a video back from the guy I was working with who's like, hey, I already got it set up. Here you go. Look how this works. I was like, oh my gosh, that was so quick. So props to Chris. This is so cool. I really, really love it a lot, a lot. So he has favoriting, but then he also has talked about how you can use this for reactions, which makes sense. So like, you know, hard eyes, thumbs up, applause, whatever, which is a great thing. You know, if you can actually take some of those and then list, see how many people have favorited something or how many people have plotted something. And then you can list posts or items based on the amount of time somebody's favorited or liked something. It's just a really, 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 really cool project. So super props to JetBoost. They're going like all kinds of crazy to give us all kinds of really cool functionality with Webflow Member Stack. And personally, I couldn't be more excited about it. So I thought it was really cool. The other thing that Chris tweeted was, I wanted to spend a minute talking about this because I want to hear what these two have to say. He tweeted, the first thing I do when I start a new Webflow project is ... And so I wanted to just take a minute and talk about this. What's the first thing everybody does when they start a new Webflow project?
I'm trying to... It depends. So if it's a client project, then I typically go and set up the CMS and what I'm thinking, you know, like here's the direction I'm going. If it's my own personal stuff, or if I'm trying to learn something or play or whatever, I go straight into designing. And then if I need the CMS, which I almost always do, then I hook it up that way. But it does create more work for me because I've designed like too much.
Yeah, I think we talk about it a lot on this show, and it's like starting with the data, making sure that the data is clean. And if we need to import into the CMS, we have it. The good thing is that if I don't have the data, then I can use like Webflow CMS, because most Webflow projects that I do have a CMS component. I can use that to generate 5 random items or 20 random items. So I have some data to play with. But you know, my first gut instinct is if I'm going into Webflow, I probably built something in Figma. So I'll start with the style guide and I'll probably style the body and then probably copy, you know, Ben has a great style guide template or there's a bunch of others out there. So start with one of those, you know, make my H1 through H6 containers, colors, set my swatches, things like that. Because when you do that in the beginning, I learned this the hard way, but like when you do it in the beginning, it makes everything so much easier when you're designing. You can just pull from your colors, pull a container element, things like that. Just having it all set up in the beginning, the, you know, 2 hours it takes or 1 hour it takes makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, I think I'm with both of you. I'm definitely that content first thought, you know, I mean, because there's nothing worse than designing something really cool and then knowing you have nothing to put in there and going, well, I'm going to cut this, I guess, for this project. I always start with pen and paper, I guess, for me. I try to scratch out what does the client have, or what does this project have as far as content piece, and then even just sketching out layout designs, thoughts, you know, how do I do this? But I guess once I open Webflow, for me, the first thing is I never start with a fresh project. I always start with this ongoing style guide project that I use. And the style guide is the first thing for me because setting your fonts, setting, you know, all that typography, setting how you're going to style any alerts, setting how you're going to style lists and all these different pieces have forms and inputs and buttons and links. Having that set to start makes it so much quicker whenever you start building because you go, okay, I have these buttons. I have button alternatives. I have, you know, primary buttons, secondary buttons. I have all my colors laid out. They're all saved as swatches. Now I can literally dive in and just start, you know, and in my project, I have my containers set how I want them. I have my nav bar set how I want it. Like everything just works. And so I feel like that's the easiest way to start for me. But I'm curious to hear what other people think. So, you know, if you're listening to this, tweet us, let us know. Where do you start? Or go link in the show notes, go jump into Chris's conversation, even better. Would love to hear everybody's thoughts on this, for sure. So JetBoost all over the place, really cool, good stuff. Adalo, analytics are now a part of Adalo. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but it looks amazing. Like, you open the tweet, not only did they add analytics, they added, like, it looks so good. And this video is so great. You know, how many, like, say this starts with, say you have 1,000 visitors, how many are users on a monthly basis, weekly basis, on a daily basis? It gives you kind of all these figures. When are they most active? Like what days, what times? And then they show you this dashboard they've configured to show you all this information. And it's beautiful. And so if you've been building an Adalo and looking with, you know, how do I track my users? Or if you've been thinking about building an Adalo, and you've been wondering, like, okay, how would I track this? This is such a killer feature. And so definitely make sure you go and check this out. Link in the show notes as usual. But shout out to the Adalo team, because this is really incredible. Like, I saw this and it was just blown away. Looks great. It's really awesome. And now I want to go build something else in Adalo just so I can see the stats. it's that cool. It's one of those features, like, where you see it, you're like, dang, now I need to use this instantly. So very awesome. Mackenzie Child, he's launched a new client site in Webflow. It's yourv1.com, which is a beautiful site. And I bring this up only to say I had not heard of yourv1. It's build your app. It's build your app, period, easily, period. That's their hero. No code, no learning curve, just yes to an app. I am super excited about this. I instantly requested access. I'm always looking for the Webflow of mobile app development. And I really hope that this is it. I'm always looking for that thing, you know. DraftBit is really cool, but DraftBit's learning curve is a little bit higher, so it probably is kind of like the Webflow, just because that learning curve is high. But, you know, then you have Glide, which is just based off a spreadsheet. If this is truly drag and drop, build an app, wow. I can't wait to give this a go.
I requested access, too. I'm really excited to see it. And the video, the guy who I guess is the founder, CEO of him, like, showing you around it just made me laugh. He makes some really bold claims in there that I was just like, oh, I can't wait to see if this holds up.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they mean by the integrations, like, section, because you see there, like, Shopify and Webflow are built in. So, like, what do you think that is? Is that like a sync with the CMS? Is that, like, the best use case for this? Because if it's mobile apps, then, you know, I'm curious to know how it ties into Webflow.
Well, I think one of the things we've seen with mobile app builders is it's when you start integrating data, it gets difficult. And right. I've yet to see somebody do it just incredibly well.
Right.
And, you know, and just knock it out of the park. If you can connect and do list based off an Airtable or based off a Webflow CMS, that means you can update the CMS and you can have your app updated for us, which would mean, like, hey, list new podcast episodes and have them in an app. Cool. And we only have to touch one piece, right? I don't know if that goes both ways. If you're pushing data, I would assume you're pulling data in from that source to this app. But I don't know. I'm curious about some of that too. I think Lacey's right. They're just, the way he talked about it just had me, like, this dude's super confident in this, which is awesome. It makes me really want to try it. But even, I don't know, I open a site, I look at how good, first of all, Mackenzie built this, so of course it's going to look incredible. But the site looks incredible. It really draws me in. Looking at the app itself, it's something that really screams, like, hey, you need to give this a try. And so I'm super stoked to go for a spin with your V1. So I request, actually, if you have access out there and you want to send us a message about what your take is on it, we'd love to hear it. It looks like a really cool app, and excited to give it a try. So I had never heard of it. This is the first time I'd heard of it, and it just looks so incredible. Clone Comp. Clone Comp is about to start. It starts July 21st, and it's a 3-day self-guided competition. It's meant to test kind of your Webflow skills, but also to help you just connect with other people in the no-code community, right? And so I'm just curious who out there is taking part. It should be really cool. There's so many great people in this no-code community, and when you say there is a Webflow challenge or like this skills challenge, like if everybody participates, it could be pretty sick because there's a lot of talent out here. I know, Lacey, do you have more on this one?
Yeah, I got to see a little sneak peek today of what it looks like, and I'm really excited. I think, Raymar and Colleen, let's see who else is putting it together. Joe from FinSuite, Noah from Graphic Owls, Ben from MakerPad, and us, and Chris from JetBoost. If I'm forgetting anybody, I apologize, but
Parker from No Code Report.
Parker, yes, from No Code Report. Yes, that's who I was thinking. And so putting it together and kind of like figuring out, you know, the best way to get the community involved and have people, come in and do the projects and take part. And cloning, I've said before, is like one of my absolute favorite things about Webflow. I think it's just like the most unique superpower that it has. And so that you'll be able to work on these projects, you're going to clone pieces, build, you're going to have guidelines that you have to follow. We're working on putting together what is the reward right now. So it's really exciting. If you're interested in it, go check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think there's like already something like over 100 people have committed to do it, which is crazy. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
You know, definitely want everybody to go jump in and take part. So if you're it doesn't matter what your skill level is. Nobody cares. We just want you to jump in, take part, learn, connect. This is all about getting to know the community, having some fun, flexing your skills, and picking up some new ones. So clonecomp.webflow.io is the address. Link in the show notes. Definitely go check it out and make sure you're there on July 21st getting started. Member Stack. You can now show the sign-up date for a member. So you could say, like, you know, if you're showing somebody on their profile page, you could say their name, member since month, year, whatever it is, which is really cool. It's a cool little feature. That's something that wasn't there before. Small, but worth noting. TechCrunch had an article come out. It was titled "No Code Will Define the Next Generation of Software." You have to have a TechCrunch subscription to read all of it, but this was a super cool article and was an interesting read.
You know what you don't have to have a TechCrunch subscription for? The hatred and the quote tweets around that article coming out. So many people were like, oh, people have been saying this for decades. And like, it was a lot of like, really, I feel like old school, old way of thinking type people. But there are a lot of people that are like, this is amazing, love it, embrace it. And a lot of people are like, TechCrunch is lying, no code isn't the future. And so it's really interesting. If you just go to TechCrunch's account, and I'll try to find the tweet and link to it, and just look at the quote tweets with replies, there's a lot of interesting discourse there.
Old man yells at cloud, you know.
100%. That's what it is.
Yeah, get off my lawn. That's always entertaining. So Webflow, in regards to TechCrunch, they tweeted about that and were mentioned in the article. And they said, no code is not a category. This is one of their quote, but rather a shift in how users interface with software tools, which is really cool. Really cool. Link to that tweet. And this also made me think of Lacey's tweet, which was, Lacey tweeted not too long ago, sometimes I think we should remove visual from visual development, or no from no code. The code is being written, it's just in a reimagined way. So this is what really, when I was reading this article, I was thinking about these things, about how I mean, people really are developing. People really are doing this work. People really are coding. They're just doing their, the work is being abstracted. So super cool. There's some more Webflow news, but I'm not going to talk about any of it. I'm going to turn the mic over to somebody else. So I'm muting myself.
I don't know if Lacey wants to talk about it either, but I would love to talk about it. So if you don't follow Jane Wong, she is, I think, like a tech reporter. Her whole thing is like she finds these unreleased features on major platforms before they even come out. And so she'll be after in advance that Twitter is coming out with scheduled tweet or something like that, and it'll come true. Like, she's like always right. And she's like, in the last year, she's tweeted a little bit about Webflow. And most recently, she put out two today that said, one of them was around subscriptions are coming to e-commerce, which I am so pumped about as someone that works in e-commerce a lot. Like, that's just insane to me. I just love, again, we talk about this every time we talk about Webflow e-commerce. Anytime I see a feature added to Webflow e-commerce, I just cry tears of joy because it's that much closer to being a great Shopify replacement. Never mind, I'm not going to go there. And the second thing that she tweeted was that Webflow is building kind of a back-end logic type tool. And so I don't know what this is. Ben is not sharing details. He's not even confirming whether it exists or not. I don't know. And I don't know if Lacey wants to talk about it either, but I don't know if this is like a Zapier Lite, like, you know, if an email comes in to this contact form, send an email to this person, because that functionality is not available right now in Webflow natively. Or if this is like, yo, this is Bubble, and like I can build all these complex user actions. And so maybe it's both. Maybe, you know, the Bubble thing is down the road, maybe not. But I'm interested to see what it turns into. What do you think?
Yeah. So I have a hard time with this, I think, because I used to lead a product team. And so I hope that someone gave her, I'm sure she got access somehow, or she just completely drew it and made it up. But it made me think about the product team. If this is a real thing and they've been working on it, that they didn't get to share this. And you know what I mean? Like, it was like a sneak peek thing, but then is it finished? Is this like, are people going to have hot takes on it because of how it's done? And, you know, it makes me think about the product team first. If it is true though, it's really exciting. And if it does become I don't place Bubble and Webflow in the same camps as like saying that they're contenders with each other really, but if it is true and they could become more of contenders, I think that would be a lot of fun. I'd also be really interested to see whatever they do release this, how much functionality is it going to have compared to a Bubble or like with your Adala web apps, like what's in store. So I'm excited about it. I'm not super crazy about, you know, little hot take releases that no Fair one enough. Knows are true.
I mean, I'm 100% sure these maybe the latest conspiracy is that companies are giving Jane Wong early access so she tweets about their product. But
yeah, it could be.
But like I think that some companies do build in like these kind of sneak peeks that Jane can find just so, because she's got a ton of followers, so people can find out about the product, and it's like a guerrilla marketing campaign in a sense. But yeah, she does this all the time. I think she's a good Twitter follow, but I do see your point. I think if I'm working on a feature for a year and a half, it's that old joke, you know, he just tweeted it out or whatever. I can't remember the exact reference, but you know, it must suck to work on something for a long time and have someone just tweet it out. But yeah, I think, you know, Ben's sitting over there quietly, not confirming or denying or nodding his head. But I mean, I think that's the gist of it with those two tweets from Jane today.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say not a thing. That's where I will not weigh in at all. But yeah, I guess we just covered that. It's fun. I didn't cover it, just for the record. I didn't cover it. I shared a clonable this week. We'll end with this one. I've been playing with some custom code stuff, and I think I mentioned it in the last episode, this GitHub repository with custom code shortcuts. And so I took some of the snippets that were around forms, and I made Webflow clonables for them just because I thought it might be easier and more accessible. And this one's all about character counts. So being able to show how many characters are in an input when somebody types, limiting an input to X amount of characters and showing them warnings, you know, like it's green, you're all good, yellow, you're getting a little close, red, you know, hey, that's not going to work, or counting words if you needed to count words in an input. So put that together, shared it, link in the show description. If you want to go grab that and clone it and steal it and use it, feel free. Release that this week. So I think that was a really long roundup, by the way. But that is what's new in no code this week. So really enjoyed that roundup. Super fun. We're going to move right on into this new discussion. There's an old saying, it takes money to make money, and we want to prove that saying wrong. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about how can you make money online, you know, using no code tools without having to put up a bunch of capital. You know, how can you make cash without capital? How can you have this store that provides you some sort of income without having to have a whole lot of overhead? And so there's a general process a lot of people follow, and typically, we'll just lead right here that Shopify has a ton of information on how you can do this. So we'll put all these links in the show notes. So if this is something you've been interested in, we're going to give you all these details where you can jump in and read these articles and these guides about how to find content or how to find product and what you can do with that. Right. But it's a really, really, really cool piece. So they've got this great guide on it, but there are typically two ways people do this. And so I guess the first thing that we should talk about is the typical barrier. The barrier is like, hey, I want to sell some shirts online, or I want to sell, you know, XYZ online. Well, one, you have to go buy all those things, because when somebody orders, you have to have them to ship. And then that's the whole other thing, right? Like orders come in, you just got to kind of make it part of your routine. Order comes in, I spend a part of my day every day putting together orders, shipping them out the door. Take a lot of time, plus it takes a lot of cash to make sure you have the tools that you need to ship, to buy the product that you need. I mean, you think about buying t-shirts. Even if you wanted 5 different t-shirts, you're probably going to need at least a base order of 50 to 100 of each t-shirt, and you start talking about an outlay of cash, and you're like, I just wanted to see if I could sell some and make money. I didn't, you know, I wasn't planning on dropping $3,000 to just kind of get started here, right? And so how can you go about it? So there's two different main ways that people do it. One is drop shipping. So essentially you sell products that somebody else has, and when those come in, you use an app or an API to essentially buy it yourself. So somebody buys it from you, you buy it from the third party provider, and then they drop ship it out the door to whoever your customer is. And so while you paid for it, you paid a lower price, you mark it up to your customer, they pay you, money comes in the bank, you make a little bit off of that. The other way is through print-on-demand services. So things like Printful, where you can, instead of having to keep shirts in stock, you can literally, you know, design your stuff, your gear. People order it, and then as soon as the order comes in, once again by an API call, they pay you for it. You pay Printful for it. Printful then prints it and ships it out the door, and you don't have to worry about anything. It's all turnkey, right? And so it's passive income. And we've seen this before in the past from companies like, you know, companies who got us started. Like, I think Zazzle was one of the really early ones that I think people think of as super, this feels weird, but like it's kind of a cheaper or lower end store. You have like Redbubble, Teespring, all these different companies that did this sort of thing. But now with no code tools and the advent of no code tools, you can do a whole lot of this yourself without having to rely on a third party service and without having to do a whole lot of work. And so we just kind of want to talk about what that looks like. So I guess, I don't know, the first thing I wanted to ask both of you is this, have either of you done this before? And if so, how? I could just love to hear your guys' thoughts.
So growing up, I always saw ads for drop shipping. Like, that was every YouTube course scam guru, like, that was ever, like, that was the first thing I saw. That was the first scam. And I was, like, fascinated by this idea that you could essentially sit at home and, you know, someone orders a product from your online store and that order goes out to China, and then China, someone in China fulfills it, and they ship it straight to the customer with your branding on it or brand list. It just doesn't have, you know, the manufacturer name. And I was like, I was fascinated by this idea. But then, like, when you get past the BS and, like, get deeper into it, drop shipping back then was hard. Drop shipping now, I think, is even harder. I think you can still do it. Like, there are definitely exceptions, but, like, you know, drop shipping margins have been cut razor thin in the past few years, because most customers can go to Amazon or AliExpress and get the product that they want without you. And so to answer your question, no, I haven't done this. I've looked into drop shipping extensively. I got into print on demand, researching it because of you. Cause you, back in our early days of meeting and starting the podcast, we talked about, you made a Webflow e-commerce to Printful tutorial, which I'll link to. And that's, like, when I found out about these print on demand services, which is amazing, because, like, now instead of buying t-shirts, like raw t-shirts, and then buying a screen printing press and then burning in my screen and, like, putting it under hot water and, like, putting a sheet over it, whatever the process is, to make one design and then, like, squeegeeing the ink onto the shirt. Like, now it's just like, yeah, I'll set up the store, I'll do the design in Illustrator, mock it up real quick, and then Printful is just gonna make the shirt. And yeah, like, I'll probably make less margins if I price it more competitively, I guess. But it's also a way easier way to sell a shirt, in my opinion. I think if you're in the early stages, that's a great way of proving your product without the initial cost, which is what this whole episode is about.
Yeah, I think so too. I haven't actually done it, but I've done a ton of research about it. Mostly because pardon, this is a slight side tangent for a second, but it's like, when you think about, most of you know, like, I'm also a mom. And so, I have friends are like, I'm looking for work, but, like, I don't want to do, like, multi-level marketing stuff and I don't know what to do. And it's like, well, then you need to do an online business because you can have control over that. They're like, well, what do I sell? And so I began doing all this research into print on demand because I realized, like, I'm not a designer, you know, TM there, but, if you want to have something, you have to have a design. And so I was like, well, you can go to Creative Market, buy a design, buy a license that allows you to put it on these products and then sell that. So did a ton of research into it. And it really, from everything that I saw and, you know, the different stores that I was watching who were doing it, it seemed like it could work well as long as you can drive adequate traffic to your site, or you really niche down and go find these Facebook groups or these other places where people are hanging out that would buy that design. It seemed like a really good, it works. My only drawback and thing that made me hesitant from actually, like, doing an experiment on it was that Printful, Printify, all of those things, when COVID happened, all of their distribution and everything was shut down. So then they were weeks and weeks behind in shipping, which causes a big problem when you, like, you know, how much do you like the design? Are you willing to wait 8 weeks for a t-shirt that you spent $20 on? You know what I mean? So that was what I saw was the biggest drawback to it, was that you're at the mercy of their distribution.
That's true. That's definitely, like, a big risk. I mean, obviously, like, COVID was hopefully a once in a lifetime pandemic. But yes, like, it's going to be hard to tell your customer. It's like, hey, you're going to have to wait 4 months for your product because we don't control our own distribution. And so that maybe when you're an indie maker, your customers hopefully have more grace on you. But when you're a large brand, just be like, hey, just give me a refund and deal with this. To the is of Amazon Prime now, are you getting parts? Like, our patience is dwindling shorter. And so when you don't control your own supply chain, that is definitely a risk.
Well, I think too, I know my dad, I think everybody has their dadisms they got from their dad, but I think one of the common ones that you, I mean, my dad taught me this when I was young, you don't get something for nothing. And I think that's true. I think that's 1,000% true. And I think it translates here. I think drop shipping can work. I know people who've made money drop shipping. Like, they go on AliExpress, they find a product, they set up a site. It doesn't even look good, but they make money. I've not drop shipped. I've done printing on demand and made some decent money, like not a lot of money, but enough that's like, oh, I can, that's Christmas presents for my kids or this year or whatever, right? Like, it's just a little bit extra that you can use to go do X, Y, and Z, right? And I've not really kept up with it. So the designs are old and it starts to dwindle over time. But I love the concept. I think what most people don't talk about when they, you don't have to put overhead into it, but there are costs, right? There's the cost of the time to do the research to find what you want to sell. There's the cost of standing up a website. And we all know as no coders, it's fairly easy to stand a website up and do something like this and do some e-commerce. So that's not a ton of work, but it's a little work. And like Lacey said, not everybody's a designer. So then you got to work on getting designs, or you're paying license for those designs, or you're working with the designer to help you get some things. And even if you're looking at this, you can't launch a store with just two shirts. So even if it's just you, it's like, okay, I can't do this for X amount of time because I need to spend time doing it. And then once it's up and running, I think one of the things that feels really weird about it all is it turns into now a marketing campaign, right? Like, I think one of the things
100%.
I'm not a huge social media fan anyway. There are a lot of reasons I'm not really on there much anymore. I don't tweet enough. I definitely am never on Facebook. I'm almost have my account deleted. I'm this close. I've got a couple other things to tie up and then it's gone. But I don't get on there. Every time you open up an app, somebody's selling you something. I'm like, okay, that's terrific. No thanks, right? Like, I'm interested in you as you want to talk to me as a person. I'm interested. If you want to sell me something, if everybody wants to sell me something, I just don't want to get on there. And I think there's that line you have to walk where it's like, oh, is this one more person selling me something online? Like, dang, I've got those invitations from friends where it's like so-and-so invited you to like a page and you're like, oh, you too? Like, you held out for so long. You were doing so good. Don't start now. But there is some of that you have to worry about. And then too, like, if you go about it I don't mean this as an insult, but like a more proper way, if you're doing targeted ads or you're doing different things, once again, now you're spending money. Right? You're spending money, except instead of spending money on a product, you're spending money on advertising that product. And so, you need somebody to buy these things. One of the cool parts about doing print on demand is that you don't have to have an audience right away, right? Like, if you can cover the cost of your website for, 6 months without making a sale, great. Or if you just need to sell one item to cover the cost, great. You can typically get away with things and you're like, oh, if it gains momentum, cool. There's a lot of, a lot of other things you can do to get eyes on it. But I think that it still is a costly business to get into. It's just a different kind of cost, right? And I think most of the drop shipping businesses I've heard of, so I have a couple friends who did really well. They invested a lot of money in it. Which is counterintuitive, right? Like, one of the things we hear all the time is like, you can do this, but you don't need to put any money into it. But they literally put tens of thousands of dollars into getting the right product and the right site and the right marketing. And then they killed. They did really great sales and they made a lot of money. But, there's a reason people succeed. And I think there's sweat equity for sure, but then there's still that capital piece that comes along and tends to be around the stores that are successful. And I think the real catch here is you always hear the stories about, like, I didn't XYZ, I had no experience, I didn't spend any money on this, I was down to my last dime, and bam, I made money, which is cool. That could happen to you. I'm not saying it couldn't. But I do like the guarded approach that Matt took here, where it's like, hey, yes, you could, but you're probably going to have to put a little bit of money in it. And there is part of it that you're going to have to sell. You got to enjoy that part of the process. So there's all those pieces, I think, to consider when you're talking about what this looks like, printing on demand and drop shipping. So I don't know. Any other thoughts on either of that from both of you?
Yeah, I think it when I was looking into this thing and like just I love online businesses anyway, but it's interesting to me how people will be like, you can start a business for zero money. You can do these things for zero money. And if you ever hear that in any context, it is not true. It is 100% not true. They're lying to you. Because even if someone, you know, provides a website to you, you still have to pay to set up the LLC or some form of thing there. And so I think it's worth exploring. There are businesses you can start cheaper, but there's nothing that you can start for free. It's going to cost you something, like Ben was saying, even in sweat equity that you're going to put into it. And I love that no code allows us to build things quickly and relatively, you know, cost, you know, have an awareness of cost depending on which subscription you're on the platform. But I love that no code enables this and that you really can, for a reduced rate, get something up and running. You don't have to have backing, and you can start playing and start seeing what works, what doesn't work. And then I really think you can make a very viable business out of this.
Right. Yeah, much more reduced rate. I mean, we're talking no office, no warehouse, no printing press, things like that. You could test a lot with no code tools.
Yeah. And with the print on demand, you can test a whole lot because it's not like you had, like Matt talked, I don't need to create screens. I don't need to buy t-shirts. I'm not going to have to go ahead and make them up and prepare them. Literally, I sell one, it gets printed. I only sell three. It's like, great, that's not working. I need to go back to the drawing board and think about some other concept or design, and you can play with that. I think what's really cool about this, though, so let's talk about like the plus sides. If it's something you have like a long-term vision for, you do have a little sweat equity, or it's something you believe in, you're like, I think this product is really cool. I know people buy it. I see an opportunity here. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, right? And so I think what's really great about this is once you do the initial work and once you get some traction on your site, it does become passive income. Like, you know, for me, I did something like this and I'm still making sales 10 years later and I haven't touched the site in 10 years. And so it's unbelievable what you can do when you're in that sort of a setup, right? But you know, it does take that little bit of setup, but it is really cool what it looks like on the back end. Cause it's like, hey, I don't have to keep up with this on a regular basis. There's nothing I really have to do. You know, I might have a refund now and then, like you said, but if things run smoothly for me, and typically they do on these types of services, then, hey, I can get this running and I don't really have to worry about, you know, maintaining this. It's just a little extra money in my pocket. And if it grows into something bigger, I also view this as, I think print on demand or ship on demand is also kind of this preview of what your business, I feel like it is like the product version of no code. So it's like, okay, I'm going to sell these shirts. 100%. And if these sell really well, then guess what? I can now invest in getting them printed locally. I don't have to worry about it. I'll take the money I make from my first 3 months of sale. I'm going to turn around and put that into getting them printed, have right. them here, and I'm going to do it myself, right? Like, you can do those sorts of things. It's like, I can validate that idea.
Right. It's literally going from like MVP to like, hey, this is my full scale web app. Because, you know, like you said, you could start with print on demand and then you could bump it up to like, hey, I'll print locally and I'll deliver it from my house. And then after that, maybe like things start really heating up and then you're like, okay, I'm going to use the Shopify fulfillment network or some other third party logistics company, and they're going to warehouse all my stuff. And like, I've done this, Ben, like, you know, like in the past, like a lot of big brands still have all their merch at this big warehouse, and the warehouse will take care of everything. You just design it. So it's literally like almost like print on demand, but at a much larger scale. And so this keeps on scaling. And I love the analogy. I think print on demand is literally the product equivalent of no code.
Yeah. You know, I had a friend who was really interested in sporting gear and he designed some stuff and, you know, it didn't go well. And then he designed some more stuff and it went a little better. And then he, you know, really hit a stride, did better. And then he took the money he made and bought licensing to print NCAA gear, right? And started printing official gear for teams. And selling it. And he ended up making some good money. started on this like little print on demand, just him, nobody else, right? Turning it into a business that's viable. Like, you can do these sorts of things. There's all kinds of opportunities out there if you're willing to kind of stick to it and prove, how you can get there and prove your concept and prove the market. It's a chance for you to really roll into that next level. So I do love that. So we talk about a little bit of the concept. So there's definitely some downsides. And it's not free money. It's not, you're going to be a millionaire tomorrow. And so it's trying to like kind of understand that, navigate those pieces and know what value really is and what's going to sell. But then it's also knowing the tools, right? And so what can you use to build a store like this? So if you've listened, you're like, yeah, I actually do have this idea where I've been joking about. In fact, I need to print some t-shirts. There's an engineer at Webflow that I've been joking about. He has a motto, and I've been telling him I'm going to get it printed on a t-shirt. I need to get this done. But you might have that idea. You're like, yes, I need to get this started. And so, you want to get rolling. Well, where can you start? Well, I'm a Webflow shill. I work at Webflow, so I'll just start with Webflow. It's a great place to start. There is a Webflow Printful integration where you can literally create your products on the Printful side. It syncs and creates them in the Webflow e-commerce, the CMS there. And then you publish it, people purchase, automatically gets printed by Printful, shipped and delivered out. It's a great way to build a store like that. So that's one way. Matt could probably talk to us for hours and hours about how to do this because he has a ton of expertise here and has done it a lot. But Shopify is a super powerful tool and they allow you to do all kinds of things. Shopify has, if you go to their apps, they have sort of a plugin store, an app store. They literally have hundreds of plugins or apps that are related to, print on demand or drop shipping, where you can go find products or pieces to sell and integrate them with your Shopify store. But then you can get super creative too. I mean, Shopify and Webflow with the Shopify buy button. I think that's still my favorite e-commerce store I ever built, used the Shopify buy button. I don't think there was a Facebook thread. I put the link in the notes here, the outline, but there was a thread in the Webflow Facebook group about how people don't take enough advantage of Webflow and the Shopify button, and how powerful a tool that is, especially with like subscriptions and some of those different pieces that are really powerful. So I don't know what other tools are out there that you all think are really powerful, and what companies print on demand or drop ship, what is it that you really love?
Well, I think an interesting one is, let's say there's a print on demand service that you want to use, but there's not a direct integration with Webflow e-commerce, but you want to use Webflow. I think you have a few different options there. One, you could go with Webflow e-commerce and then have on successful order or on maybe a Stripe successful charge or something like that, you can have that information pushed to whatever third-party services API that you want, which will require just a little bit of code, but you can use something like Zapier or Integromat to do it. And Ben has a tutorial before Printful release and integration. Ben has a tutorial on how to do this in Integromat, which is linked in the show notes. But I think you could go that route, or it's not something I always recommend. I recommend it for small stores, but after you get to a few products, I think for security reasons, it's not a good choice. But I think Foxycart is a really interesting choice because Foxy allows you to build a Webflow front end and like customize it exactly the way you want. I mean, you can get real granular. And on the back end, it's really granular too. You can get super, super granular, but you have to look into it, and we could do it. In fact, it's on our list to do an entire episode on, Foxycart versus the other platforms. But the cool thing is, if you use Foxy with Webflow, you can have your Webflow front end make it look as beautiful as you want, have Foxy do your orders, and then Foxy has webhooks that you can tie into on successful order. Again, you don't need any third-party tools, most likely. Maybe you might need Zapier or Integromat to handle that webhook. But you can have Foxy do the commerce part and then push that to print-on-demand services other than Printful, and that could work. And so You know, don't feel limited by like, oh dang, like Webflow only has Printful as an option. There are other options. Some might require just a little bit of code, but there's definitely tutorials and resources out there to help you.
All right, so this is where we talk about the fun stuff here. We've talked about tools a little bit, but if you were, so I love Foxy. I didn't bring that one up. I probably should have. It's a really good one. I'm a Webflow e-commerce person. I have played with Shopify some, and I've built some Shopify for some Liquid, and I'm not super proud of that, nor do I look back on that experience with fond memories. In fact, I think I may have cussed more during that period of my life than ever before, as it angered and frustrated me. But, you know, so there's those tools. You know, what other e-commerce platforms? I think one thing that doesn't get mentioned enough probably is WooCommerce and WordPress. So if you're a WordPress connoisseur, there is something for you. You can set up a store like this with a WordPress platform. In fact, there's a lot of other plugins that will do some stuff like this in WordPress too. So what other e-commerce platforms do both of you love? Obviously not Elliot. Elliot's not an option. We talked about that last week. That one's gone.
I was going to say that, but I'm glad you did.
Had to make the joke. But what other platforms, e-commerce platforms, do you love and that you think about when you're using these sorts of stores?
Well, I think the thing is, I think e-commerce in terms of like which ones you should use, it's pretty limited. It's probably like, you know, Shopify, Webflow e-commerce, WordPress, WooCommerce, BigCommerce, things like that. You could also do something like, and I think this is actually powered by Shopify. I'm not 100% sure because I haven't set it up personally, but like Facebook and Instagram have marketplaces. Like, and I'm not talking like where you sell your like third part or used goods. That's a different marketplace, but you can sell direct. Yeah, it is a Shopify thing now that I think of it. But like set up a Shopify store and then tie it to your Facebook business account and your Instagram business account and let people shop on the app. That way they never leave the, I don't think they leave the browser or the app, and all your sales are native to the platform. And still, same thing. It's on successful charge, send it to the dropshipper. And so that's an option too. But I feel like there's only a handful, unless you're thinking of some that I might be missing. There's only like a handful that I could think of.
You're not going to mention Wix or any of those or Square?
I guess, yeah. Wait. Oh, Squarespace. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I forgot about them. Great platform.
I've just been waiting for you to tee up Squarespace. You're the Squarespace.
I don't know how I forgot that. Squarespace, Wix, Weebly. Maybe Editor X if it supports that in the future, but I really do think Squarespace is a good option. I don't know why I was blanking on that, and it's gotten a lot better since it released, I think, in 2012. Like, it's just great all around for custom stores.
I do want to circle back though, because you talked about Facebook and Instagram, and you can do that with Webflow too. Problem with doing that is you support Facebook and Instagram when you do that. I am like probably very hardline anti-Facebook.
Fair enough. You know,
especially in light of everything that's come out recently, and how they responded to some of, you know, I don't want to get political, but and how they responded to some of what President Trump had to say, and some of those pieces, and how they were approached by leaders talking about their support of hate speech and how it's doing damage, and some of the role they played in the process of, political process in America the past couple of election cycles. I'm just not a huge fan. I don't think that Facebook occupies any moral high ground, and I hate supporting them in any way, shape, or form if I can avoid it. Fair enough.
Yeah, I think, like, if you don't want to sell there, you don't have to. It's just... And technically the back end is Shopify. But yes, you're right. Like, I think Facebook and Instagram are supported by doing that. So it's just a channel to note for sure.
Sorry, I can't talk about it without going off on the tangent. But both Matt and Liz, you're like, he's talking about Facebook again. Like, just shut it. But I despise them. So Anyway, but so lots of options here, lots of different platforms to choose from, lots of different things to think about. And so if this is something you thought of, we'd love to, like, you know, if you've got ideas, feel free to hit us up. If we've got some bandwidth, we're always down to talk shop about some of these, literally, about some of these, but some of these ideas that you might have. But just wanted you to, we wanted to talk a little bit, this is something that's been on our mind, just not just the pros of it, but also the cons, like what do you get into? And then what does that process look like? We linked to a bunch of resources on how you can do this in the show notes. So definitely check those out and jump in, and can't wait to hear your feedback on what you're using, what tools you love, and if there's something that we missed. So anyway, that is our episode on print on demand, shop on demand, or ship on demand in e-commerce with no-code tools. And we hope you enjoyed listening, really enjoyed this episode talking about both this and the no-code roundup. Was super fun. And we can't wait to talk to you all next week. We'll see you.
Deuce.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to visualdev.fm. You can find us on your favorite social media platform at visualdev.fm.